Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A bit of a curveball opener this week. You know how we like to celebrate the magic of non-league? Well, what better magic than a chance for Step 7 footballers representing England in a continental championship? With three lions on their shirt and probably plenty of other kit too, a representative team from Jersey are in Italy next week, and we speak to Jersey FA CEO David Kennedy to find out more. Next up, Philanets is back with his at FA Vars fact file hat on his head as he talks us through some of the more interesting facts to tee up the second qualifying round in the FA Vars this weekend, played alongside a similar round for the FA Trophy. Competing in the FA Vars are Windsor FC this weekend, a side with decent runs a few years back in the Vars, and a recent return to that manager and an old stalwart striker turned coach to hopefully reignite that magic. We speak with owner and founding director Kevin Stott on that and building a club literally from the ashes on a self-sustainable model that sees the club still here 11 and a half years on. Rounding off the show and the week's busy managerial merry-go-round is the executive editor of the non-league paper, John Couch. There are big names in and big names out, and a couple more moving from interim to permanent roles. Plus, the National League news and how fans can help understand the impact of the current financial crisis on the future of non-league football. It's a bumper-packed show with news, views and insights you probably won't get elsewhere. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So, yes, this weekend it's a pretty full non-league football programme, and FA Trophy, FA Vars at the second qualifying round. But the game I want to start this show with, I want to preview a game in Italy next week. Lazio, the opposition, Jersey, the English FA representatives to face them. Makes sense? I hope it will in the coming minutes as we preview England versus Italy in the UEFA Regions Cup, taking place next Thursday, 29th of September, in Italy. To guide us through, it's a warm welcome to the CEO at the Jersey FA, Mr. David Kennedy. Welcome, David.
How are we doing, Tim? You all right?
I'm good. Now, these are the sort of stories that really do excite me. So the UEFA Regions Cup, it's nothing new. It's been going decades with a final every other year, and it's there to promote amateur football as an essential pillar of football across Europe. But players that feature are those that haven't previously been part of the professional game. And in England, the representative side is chosen via a cup competition between, I think, Step 7 non-league representative sides who compete in the Interleague Cup. And the Jersey Combination League beat the West Cheshire League 5-1 in the final of the Interleague Cup in May 2021 at St George's Park for this honour. Am I right so far?
Yep, spot on so far, Tim, yep.
And it's Jersey win the right in May 2021 to represent the English FA in this big inter-European competition. And then it looked like COVID might see that chance wiped out.
Yeah, I mean, even before we actually won the Interleague Cup, Tim, obviously we were well underway with the competition. We had got to the semi-final stage, and then obviously COVID hit and, you know, the world changed significantly. And in all honesty, the way that things were going, we just couldn't see the competition being completed. And it was just probably around about late April, very early May, where the FA got in touch and said, do you know, we've got a window of opportunity here that, you know, potentially we'd still like to get the semi-finals played and then hopefully get to the final. So as it happened, it was one of the sort of windows that there wasn't lockdown. Travel had opened up slightly, albeit very restricted. In fact, we actually had to charter a flight from Jersey over to the mainland. But we went over, we got through the semi-final, and then, as you say, it was, I think it was in May that we went through to the final at St. George's Park, and even that was an experience because due to COVID and restrictions at the time, the final was almost policed like a military exercise with the number of stewards that were there and the numbers that were allowed in, or probably more importantly, not allowed into St. George's Park. But so the most important thing for us is that we got to the final, we won it, we deservedly won it, and lifted the trophy. So, once we did that, we thought, well, there's absolutely no chance at all of us representing England. We were pretty sure that the UEFA Regions Cup wasn't going to happen. In fact, actually, we'd been told that had been the case at the time anyway. So this all came about as a bit of a surprise a few months later when it said, yeah, you know what? You might just have a good chance of representing England in the UEFA Regions Cup.
And so Thursday, the first game, which is of the intermediate stage, there's been some prelims that we were exempt from. Thursday, Jersey against Lazio, and it's the Lazio region, I believe, not the Lazio club, but I guess the records will always show it as England against Italy. England are in group 5 out of 8 groups, each with 4 teams in it. The other sides in our group representing Germany and North Macedonia. So as well as the game on the 29th, this is proper tournament football with other games on the 2nd of October and the 5th of October. I can't, what a massive honour to represent the English FA in a tournament like this.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, we've actually been very fortunate. This is the second thing that the Jersey won the Interleague Cup and then went on to represent England. We actually did it in 2013. And represented England in San Marino back then. So, you know, some of us have been involved in that in the past, but obviously for a majority of the players, this is going to be a whole new experience for them. And, you know, certainly this, as you say, tournament football, it's, you know, eat, sleep, live football for, you know, 8 days. They'll be going over there treated like absolute professionals. Obviously got the infrastructure of the FA in terms of, you know, the kit, the medical side of things, the nutrition side of things, analysis side of things. So, you know, the guys are literally going to be, you know, professional footballers for 8 days. So, you know, they'll have everything done for them. All they've got to do, they've been told, is just to turn up at the airport with a set of boots and everything else will be done. And then it's then up to them just to do the business when they get in the pitch.
Now, over the years, I'm no longer built for a football shirt, so I have to say. The ability to run out with 3 lions on your shirt. I mean, it doesn't matter what level you're playing, you're representing England. It is a schoolboy dream. And I'd imagine most of the guys that these lads work with and socialise with probably don't even believe them.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, for the lads to put on the 3 lions and represent their country is just something that, well, let's be honest, 99.9% of the football playing population will never ever get the opportunity to do. So, you know, undoubtedly it's all a bit surreal, to be honest. But then, you know, they'll get over there and, you know, really it all starts kicking in and it hits home, the sort of magnitude of the task at hand, but probably more importantly, the opportunity that they have to go. And you know, one thing's for sure about our lads that are going over, they'll want to do well. They'll want to do well for their island, but they'll also want to do well for their country. It's a competition that, you know, England's always been represented in and has never got through to the next stage. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we've got a real determination about our squad to do so.
Yeah, and I understand that the term's amateur football. So my understanding is that a player can play as long as they haven't ever signed a contract for a club and as long as they're registered for a local club last season within that league, I guess.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So obviously the fact that nobody's been on a contract, that in itself is a leveller. It's then just going to come down to that sort of, you know, the ability levels across amateur football, across the various different nations. And, you know, the special thing about that is that you have absolutely no idea what that's going to look like until you actually step on the pitch and go toe-to-toe with these people. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for our guys. I mean, bear in mind that, you know, we're just a little island. We've only got 110,000 people here to go over and actually represent a, you know, a nation of over 60-odd million is incredible.
Have the Hollywood rights been bought up yet?
I think, do you know what, Tim? If we get through to the next stage, then you know we might want to give a few film directors a bit of a call, because undoubtedly there's going to be a bit of a story here. And you know, in terms of us as an island, you know, in the past we've expressed a real interest in sort of taking that next step and hopefully joining UEFA. That didn't materialise in 2017. So, you know, to have, you know, Jersey still recognised on the international scene, albeit even at the amateur level, is a massive thing for this little island.
And you're the CEO of the Jersey FA, and I'm not one to blow smoke, but you know, in recent years, yeah, there's a number of Jersey players in the squad called up by Martin Cassidy for this tournament. But Jersey Bulls obviously playing now in the Pyramid. What sort of impact has the club's acceptance into the football pyramid in England had on football locally within Jersey?
I mean, it's been brilliant in terms of what it's, the outcomes from it. I mean, ultimately what we've done is that the better players on Ireland are now playing with the Bulls and obviously doing really well at step five and got, you know, some, you know, ambitions to obviously be promoted. And what that's meant is that that's then levelled out the leagues, if you like, and then, you know, we're seeing a much more competitive league. In fact, if anything, what's happened as well is that we're seeing a lot more younger players sort of fast-tracked in first-team football, and I think that's been a really positive thing. So it's opened up more opportunities for them as well. But in terms of even football in the island, Tim, I mean, we're in a good place. I mean, even just this week, we've seen young Luke Harris called up to the Welsh senior squad. You know, he's doing amazing things at Fulham for such a young lad. You know, we're very proud that, you know, he's came through the system on the island and then moved over to Fulham and is doing some amazing things there. So, you know, it just shows that for a little island, we're, you know, we punch above our weight. We're in a good place in terms of, you know, the numbers that we're playing here. We've got, you know, continual interest for a lot of our young players from senior clubs. And as you say, the Bulls are doing really well. So, I mean, for us, just probably going to UEFA Regions Cup, it's kind of a bit of an icing on the cake for us, really. You know, we're in a good place. And I say that very much with touch wood, because I know what this industry can do to you. You know, it can change very, very quickly. But, you know, we want to make the most of this because, as I say, we're in a good place.
And it is a great story for non-league. Yeah, but back to this tournament, if you, the eight group winners from this intermediate stage in this coming week or so, then go into two groups of four next summer for another tournament, and the winners of each group then play off for a final and the title of UEFA Regions Cup winners. I mean, it's almost like a perfect celebration of non-league football. Why don't we know more about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, ultimately, it's, well, for that very fact, it's, you know, it's the step seven football. It's the one that's probably, for me, it's probably the most important level of football because it's the grassroots. It serves, you know, everything else above it. And, you know, it's got a massive part to play in the whole of English football. But despite that, it's probably the bit that's least reported on. You know, it's the bit that you never ever see in the papers because obviously that's taken up column inches by all the big boys and you know, and sort of full-time guys. But, you know, certainly for us and on a small island, I mean, we certainly, you know, we appreciate the magnitude of it. You know, that, you know, it's a big, big deal for us over here. And, you know, if we were to go over and we were to qualify for the first time ever, then hopefully that in itself may just raise the profile, not just of us over here in Little Jersey, but of course of that level of football and what can be achieved from it.
Yeah, well, we always bang the drum for step seven and below and above. It is, as you say, the lifeblood of football, whether that's players or whether that's people that then, yeah, their playing career doesn't fully take off and they move up behind the scenes, because that's what we need more of. We need more people to be involved in their local non-league clubs and enjoying local non-league football. This sounds like the perfect way to enjoy non-league football. David Kennedy, best of luck representing us all in Italy next week and beyond. Really appreciate your time and thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Many thanks, Tim.
So it is the second qualifying round of the FA Vars this weekend. 179 ties featuring 358 clubs. So, of course, it is time to turn to our very own stats man. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Vars Back Farm. Mr. Phil Annetts, welcome back, Phil.
Yeah, always good to be back. It's time talking about the Vars.
Well, yeah, the Vars is Always, yeah, it's one of our passion projects, I guess, isn't it? Yeah, 586 clubs competing in the competition this year. And this is the final qualifying round. And I always think it's a bit disrespectful to what's gone on before to call the next round the first round proper.
Yes, it does seem like a lot of clubs are involved in the first two qualifying rounds to then have their season finished. That's almost about 350-odd clubs who are out of the competition before we even get the first round proper. So, yeah. The theme, right? They could just call it the first round and move it on from there.
Yeah, people don't like change too much, particularly not at non-league level. And we've got the second qualifying round, but it's actually the biggest round of the competition too.
Yeah, there's actually more clubs involved in this round than there was in the last round, and only by six clubs, but still, it's quite unusual. And normally, you'd get more in the first qualifying round. So obviously, something to do with the fact of the number of clubs that are now at step five and step six, and also a combination of those clubs who may be exempted because of their achievements from last season. And so I guess each year it will be a varied number at this stage.
Yeah, and I think that's probably some of the added magic for the FA Vars, right, over our, you know, standard league campaigns and that sort of thing. There's history being made everywhere you look. I think 9 first timers in the competition, and two of those are actually entering in at this round.
Yeah, so it must be some kind of lottery about who gets into the first qualifying round or who goes into the second qualifying round for those clubs that aren't exempt. And AEK Boko, I think that's how you pronounce it, and Fleetland FC are both in the competition for the first time, starting in this round rather than the last round. And they'll be joining the others who have already won their debut match, including clubs exotically sounding like London Samurai Rovers and Letchworth Garden City Eagles and Hartlepool University. And within that lot is Frickley Athletic, who are in the Vars for the first time, having come down from the higher level last season.
Yeah, and it is the FA Vars that sort of brings to light some of those magical names. And, you know, there's also, obviously, a lot of clubs that were in, that have maybe progressing, making history in the FA Vars this year, having had their first ever FA Vars victory in the first qualifying round, where all these changes have happened as to who's eligible for the FA Vars as well. you know, FC Parson Drove is a name that only non-league football could offer.
Yeah, I mean, there has been a Parson Drove FC in the Vars in the past as well, and in the FA Cup. But yes, FC Parson Drove, a fantastic name. You've also got Larkfield and New Hive Wanderers, who have won their first match this season. And Roffey FC, another great name. And all of the clubs that have won in the first qualifying round this time around for the first time have all got home draws in the second qualifying round. So every chance they can make it 2 out of 2.
And that's a magical stat, that one, isn't it? And also the fact of, is it Montpellier Villiers? Travelling to Roffey FC, which means that there is going to be someone appearing in those proper rounds or in the next round. As we say, in the next round for the very first time.
That's right, yeah. So that's the one tie where neither side has made it as far as the first round in the past. And so the winner of that tie between Montpellier Villa and Roffey will be celebrating FA Vars history.
But it's not all just about, you know, the clubs that have maybe made this step up the first time they've been able to make progress in the FA Vars. We've also got, what, 6 past winners of the FA Vars competing in this round?
We do, yes. It's one of the nuances of the FA Vars competition is that we have past winners starting off in the very early rounds, and we have Wickham FC, who are up against Albion Sports, who are looking to try and make that first round for the first time. And we also have Whitley Bay, Bricktown, Distown, Stansted and Deal Town, who are all past winners of the Vars, looking to try and win it again this season.
And looking at the names of those clubs, you know, they're almost old school names as well, aren't they? We're talking about some of the new school names coming through, and the old school names are still there. It just shows the way football changes. There's a number of clubs that probably hope that football does change, where they're meeting opponents that they've met before and hoping to avenge some defeats. I know there's was it at Selby Town and Glasshouse Welfare? There's a long-running need to get out of their system a past result, I think, there.
Well, that's right. Yeah. It's 30 years since the Glasshouse Welfare and Selby Town met in the competition. And it will be their third time. In fact, Glasshouse and Welfare have won the previous two, so Selby have had to wait a long time to try and avenge that. And who knows, it could be this weekend.
Yeah, and again, as ever, plenty of sides that have met together in the FA Vars before. Two ties. This is going to be the fourth time that they faced each other in the competition as well, which is quite remarkable, given it's not the oldest competition that clubs are playing in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's quite unusual. I mean, there's only about a fifth of the ties that involve clubs that have met in the Vars before, so it's not too many. And to have met four times in the past, you've got Birstall United and Holwell Sports who are meeting for the fourth time, with Birstall 2-1 advantage in terms of wins in the past. But the more significant one is Baldock Town, who travelled to Long Melford, and this is their fourth meeting in just nine Vars campaigns. And so they are well familiar with each other, but Baldock Town have the edge with having won all three of their past encounters. So, you know, they will be believing they can do the same again, but maybe it's time for Long Melford to get their act together and get the first victory over them.
Yeah, the statistics suggest that it may be a time for change there, but it might be a seed of doubt in certain fans' minds, I'm sure. We've mentioned about clubs making history by winning games. Worcester City as well, they'll be hoping to continue their history, I guess, by winning in this round as well.
Yeah, so Worcester City, obviously a team from many years who obviously played at higher levels in the football pyramid, now playing at step five and have been involved in the Vars for the last five seasons, but have yet to fail to make it through to the first round as a minimum. So they'll be very keen to keep that unblemished record going and maintain their Vars record and maybe even go even further than they have done in the past.
And we've got international break, so football at the higher level not taking place. So it's a great weekend for people to go and sample non-league football and go and see what it is that attracts us week in, week out. But what a weekend as well with the FA Vars. A full weekend, isn't it? It's what have we got? Seven games on Friday night, I think five on the Sunday, and also early and 3 PM kickoffs on the Saturday.
Yeah, so there's plenty of opportunity to get yourself to see an FA Vars game over the weekend, or maybe two or three. Yeah, so you're right, there's Friday night, there's early Saturday at Shoreham versus Jersey Bulls, and then there's a handful of games also on the Sunday. But obviously the majority of them are Saturday 3 o'clock kickoffs, as is norm. But the length and breadth of the country, so there's bound to be a game nearby where you live. So if you are used to going to top flight games or professional games, then here's a chance to go and watch your local club in the FA Vars.
And if you're not, if you're normally a non-league game, here's a chance to drag some of those top flight fans, shall we say, down to non-league and show them what it's all about. Because I don't think you get more passionate matches than the FA Vars, really. There's something that does mean even more so than the FA Cups, I think, because there's more of a level playing field in these games. I think players see a chance for some glory and just pull out an extra 1 or 2%, sometimes even more in their performances.
Yeah, so the FA Cup is the glory competition. Everyone loves to have been involved in it. But the beauty of the FA Vars is that any club can actually win it, and any club can end up at Wembley at the end of the day. So, you know, they've all got it in them to do so. So that's what makes the games extra special, because they all believe it is their year, and why not?
And, of course, making the games extra special, anywhere that people can look out for you, Phil, this weekend for FA Vars games?
Well, interestingly, I'm off to Wantage Town against Fleet Town but I'll actually be going to another game beforehand as part of the Whitney and District Hop. I'll be going over to see Blythe Norton at 11 o'clock in the morning. So I'll get a game in the morning there as part of their event, and then I'll shoot down to Wantage for the afternoon game.
It sounds a great afternoon of football already, Phil. Well, where can people find out more about your stats, facts and all your hard work?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at FAVarsFactFile, and from there you can get a link into my blogs that cover previews of the rounds and reviews of previous rounds and all sorts of stuff about football and the FA Cup, of course.
Yeah, and also check out Phil's Twitter for unique videos that the rest of the world likes to embrace. Doesn't always like to give the credit for, but Phil Annetts was the man in the know, the man who knew where to go, and we appreciate your reporting back on the FA Cup last week, Phil. Always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Great stuff. Thanks, Tim.
So let's chat with one of those clubs involved in the FA Vars this weekend, and indeed a club with a decent FA Vars pedigree too. Quarter finalists and a last 16 place in back-to-back years in 2017-2018 and 2018-2019. And no doubt they'll be hoping to repeat that success and perhaps go a little bit further again. After the world's attention was on Windsor earlier this week, I thought it only fitting to pin our own spotlight on the same town, and Windsor FC. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show owner and founding director of Windsor FC, Mr. Kevin Stott. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Always,
it's nice to be here.
Well, it's always good to get you back on. And of course, a very sad time across the country, across the globe, and I guess locally and for the club too.
Yeah, it was tough. In fact, I was talking to somebody else this morning and thinking that was exhausting over the, you know, emotionally exhausting over the last two weeks. You're in it, whether you like it or not. You're in that situation, and it was quite tough to live through. And regardless of what the FA had done, we made a choice to not play any games until the funeral was over. We just felt wrong, you know. So that's what we did. But yes, it was tough.
And it was tough, and indeed it was. But I don't think there's any week in your sort of role where it isn't tough. And I couldn't help thinking that there was a fantastic turnout of the public in remembrance. But it also had symmetry with each and every non-league club up and down the country who've experienced a great cup run. Because the next day, the crowds are gone, yet the state or the club, you're looking at the non-league thing, we still have to run. You have to run just as smoothly, just as efficiently, just as it does the other 364 days of the year.
Yes, that's true. I empathise with that entirely. In fact, exactly my experience. And I remember once when I was involved in the previous club, Windsor Neaton, we went away and played Marlow in the Barks and Bucks Cup Final, Senior Cup Final, at MK Dons. 500 or 600 people turn up. We win 1-0, and then on the Tuesday night, there's 65 people and a dog.
And but I bet the dog didn't pay either.
No, dogs go free at our club. As well as under 16s, by the way, and they don't have to be accompanied by an adult. So,
good plug. Now, I think when we last had you on, it was to help garner some coverage for your issues with the Crown Estate, because at Stag Meadows on Crown Estate land, and you were just trying to organise the lease. Is that now nearing a resolution?
Is that now written? That's an interesting one. I think that we are perhaps closer than we have been for some time. But, you know, this whole discussion and negotiation goes back to 2010. And so it's a long, long time to have a fundamental issue unresolved. But I feel, and it's more of a feeling than anything else, that the way we are approaching that at the moment is more likely to get a resolution than anything that we've done to date. So I was going to say, I'll leave it at that. I mean, we can discuss it in more depth if you want to, but I think that sort of summarizes it. It nicely, but I took a view, I took a view 3 or 4 years ago that I really wasn't going to have, you know, the destiny of the football club and my whole sort of emotional state really sort of controlled by an external third party. So I took a view that we would just make the best of what we were rather than consistently waiting for, well, if we get a lease, we can then do X, Y, and Z, and we can go up the pyramid and all those kind of things. So we just took a view that we're at the top of the vast pyramid, for want of a better phrase, and that what we would do is embrace that and do everything that we could possibly do to make the best of where we are, rather than spend our lives bemoaning the fact that, you know, without a long-term lease, we can't put in implement the business plan, which would then create the sustainable income streams to sustain budgets and move up the pyramid. So that's where we are in that regard.
That's a great answer, because I wanted to get you on to talk about the FA VARs, and we'll come to that in a minute. But I also wanted to get you on because I know we share similar feelings on the need to be self-sustainable. And I sense when you will sort this lease issue out on Stag Meadow. Yeah. And when you do, it's going to be a bit like Brexit anyway, isn't it? Because it won't be perfect for everyone, and that's part of being involved at a football club. You're never going to keep everybody happy. When I look, 11 and a half years ago, February 2011, I think, when you set up the current club after Winter and Eton ended up folding under massive debts. Back then, I remember your big thing was sustainability as a club, self-sufficiency. And I think that played a big hand in the FA allowing you to enter straight in at step five. And a decade and a bit on, you're still here, still competing. So I guess you were right.
Well, I mean, I think it was, equally, I think, you know, I've always said fans don't necessarily mind what level you're playing at, providing you're successful. And what I'm not interested in doing is, what I call it, a race to the bottom financially, is throwing money that you can't sustain in order to get to a level of incompetence. So, you know, you could throw, let's say, I don't know, a promotion budget at this level might be 100,000 a year. And then you get to step four. And because you don't have a sustainable income stream coming from the club rather than the benefactor, it's like, well, what are we going to do now? And then all of a sudden you're stuck at step four. Or you go back to step five. And for me, that's not a plan. As I say, it's a race to the bottom financially. If you take that all the way up the pyramid to the Premier League, you know, almost everybody's got that challenge, because if you take, you know, Manchester City and Newcastle, who are effectively run by countries, you're just never going to be able to compete financially. So you've got to find different ways of competing. So I have a little phrase, which is, we can always be outbought, but we won't be outthought or outfought. And so our focus is on those the last two things, rather than trying to think, but if we had, you know, £1 million, if we had £2 million, because you can never win, because at some point you'll reach a point where somebody's always got more money. So that's not a winning strategy for most people. So, you know, I grew up in Norfolk, and Norwich is therefore my professional team, and they're a wonderful example of that. You know, they have to find different ways of competing. As Delia Smith says, she's the poor millionaire, which means basically she can't just bankroll hundreds of millions of pounds a year just to create a successful team. And even if you do that, you know, countries who own football clubs effectively up the ante. So all you do is create inflation. So as I say, that's why I consider it to be a race to the bottom anyway.
Yeah, and it's a great analogy with Norwich as well, because I think, as you say, money can get you promoted for sure. You buy up the players from two levels above, and then they get you promoted up through those levels. But every level you go up not only costs you more on the field for a playing budget, but it probably doubles the off-the-field effort and costs to meet bigger crowds, greater regulation. So it is only that self-supporting model that's going to really keep a sense of reality about the dreams and promotions and climbing the pyramid, because otherwise, as you say, you'll get up and you'll probably be stuck because you haven't got the resources off the field. Somewhere like Norwich, they probably spent more money off the field to keep them in that top echelon of football than on the field, and that's helped them continue and stay up there.
I think I think what they've done, and this is what we try to do, is to make everything, if you can't compete financially in terms of wages, then try and make everything else better than everybody else, because we can do that. So a good example of that is, I think that, rightly so, we have a reputation of having the best playing surface, grass playing surface in the area. In fact, I think some years ago we won, our groundsman won a groundsman of the year through the FA nationwide for that. So, and that's important. But I was talking to somebody else the other day. I think that if everything else is equal, generally speaking, and I say this guardedly, you know, people want to play for Windsor. It's got something about it. So we have to make sure that all of the things that are within our control and that we can sustain are better than anybody else. And that's what we, you know, work hard to do, really.
Yeah, and that goes back, I guess, to that non-league family, doesn't it? How you know, you and I have grown up within the non-league world and sort of you know, made friends and a couple of enemies, maybe. But you get to.
I have a theory on that, by the way. To make an enemy, all you have to do is say no. Just say no. And then they appear from all over the place.
I think as soon as you put your head above the parapet, you're always going to get people trying to shoot you down. I mean, I'm lucky in my job. I get to speak to chairman, owners of football clubs, and with my other hats on, I get to speak to entrepreneurs, politicians, business leaders.
Yeah.
The one thing I always take away is whatever level you're at, whatever resources you have, the key is to get value out of that, of what you have at that moment. And that's how you make success and long-term success, because you build securely. And that seems to be where you're coming from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. These are perhaps cliches, but it's about understanding the things within your control and then doing everything you can, given the resource available, to get the most out of those. And that's what we focus on. Because anything else will drive you mad. Because otherwise, you just spend your time thinking, "Yeah, but if I had a bigger budget, you know. Yeah, but if we had a new stand, you know. Yeah, but if the players had, you know, Gucci tracksuits, you know." It's just a nonsense. You'll drive yourself mad, you know, trying to achieve the things that you can't achieve. One of our supporters once gave an analogy when he was talking about, you know, because you can, when you're trying to work within a sustainable model, you're going to consistently be challenged. Oh, you lack ambition. And it's not true. You just lack money. And so you don't say to your mum and dad, "You lack ambition because we don't live in a palace. We live in a four-bedroom detached." You know, you just don't.
Or you might say it to them once, and I don't think you'd be living there for much longer. But
yeah, but you just, you know, it's people confuse ambition with money. Having money, and the two things are entirely different. So, as I say, you know, our ambition is confined to working out what's within our control, what are the resources we've got available, and making the absolute most of those. And if we've done that, we can honestly say that at the end of a season, when we've come 10th, then we've maximised our potential in that context. But as I say, everything else is just a folly. Because you can't win that the money game. I don't know how to win that on a sustainable basis, though.
Yeah.
And if anyone's got the answer, you know, please just come and see me. Great, I look forward to it.
And I'll make sure I get them on the show.
But if there was a simple answer, you know, there are at step five. This was 800 or 900 clubs nationwide. You know, if there was an answer, do you think that, you know, somebody within that big pool would have worked it out? And the reason that I haven't is because there isn't one. Anyway, listen to me getting all philosophical.
And that's what I was going to say. These are the things that they do distract us, don't they? They have to be done. As I said earlier on in the show, these are the things that, you know, 365 days a year, a football club still has to run, and they're still, you know, you probably are thinking, you know, you can't afford a new stand, but I'm sure you've probably know who you could get a new stand from if suddenly there was a massive windfall.
Yep.
You know all these things, you just can't get there. So, but what we have to focus on is Saturday again. We've got a game of football. This Saturday, you've got the FA Vars. It's the second qualifying round.
You've
got Harefield United coming to you, who are, I think, a club in your same division in the Combined Counties Premier Division North.
They are.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing that it's a club that you know so well?
Well, I don't think we do know them so well. I think it's the first time we've played them for a very, very long time. And I think that if this is, if I can just be anecdotal for a second, it was hilarious. Well, we played them at their place a few weeks ago and we lost in the league. But prior to that, the last time we played them was when we were in Windsor and Eton back in the day, and they were pulling out of the league for some reason. And the I love this about non-league football. With 10 minutes to go, they brought on a substitute who's actually dressed as a hare. And he played the last 10 minutes as a hare. And I just kind of, those are one of the great things about non-league football, because this is just not going to happen in the Premier League, is it? But, you know, but that aside, no, I don't have an issue with playing local sides. Not at all. And I don't think we do know them that well. We know that we lost to them, and we know why we lost to them. And obviously tomorrow we're going to do everything we can to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Yeah, does that answer that question?
Yeah. I mean, the man you've got in charge, Mick Woodham, back as manager in pre-season after 3 years away, Mark Cooper stepping down, he was in charge of perhaps the best time so far for the club. And I sense, even when the announcement was made, there was a little bit of spark added to the club upon his return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you look at his track record, it was exemplary. I think his overall win rate when he was here for the first 8 years was about 54%, which by any measurable standards for a manager is excellent. And yeah, as you mentioned at the beginning of this, we got to, in two consecutive seasons, we got to the last 8 and the last 16 of the Vars. In his time, we won 2 back-to-back Barks and Bucks senior trophies. We got to a League Cup final. And I always say that the performance is relative to the level you're at. And if you're a Watford, say, or a Norwich fan, then if relatively speaking, they'd achieve the same things in various competitions at that level, you'd just be delighted. Oh, and we all also used to, generally speaking, achieve a top six finish. So, and I think that both of us, we had this chat quite often, perhaps neither of us quite appreciated what we both had in each other at the time. But with the benefit of hindsight and a bit of space, I think both of us have been able to appreciate, what we were able to achieve together, I think. And certainly I think the fans love him. So that's always a plus, but deservedly so, because with the limited resource, with the resource we had, I don't know whether it's limited because I don't know everybody else's circumstances, but with the resource that we had, I think that we certainly maximised our potential during that period before. And yeah, there's always a sort of bit of, never go back, but I think he's a better manager than when he left. I'd like to think I'm a better person and a better chairman than when he left. Hopefully we can emulate some of the success we had previously.
Yeah, and putting the band back together as well. Return two of Barry Howells to the coaching staff, a player in those past FA Vars runs I mentioned earlier. Are his striking boots definitely hung up, or do you still keep them polished?
I don't think people use polish these days, do they? they use water; it's all synthetic. But he played the other day against Blackwell Heath. He's 50 and he's an extraordinary man, and just an exemplar of how to look after yourself, throughout your life. I mean, and I'm not sure, he might sort of challenge me for this, but I'm not sure that pace was ever his game. So, it doesn't matter. He's in physically great shape. And we won that game. He scored one and made one. And the goal he scored was just a peach. It's not just average stuff. So, I don't know, but I suspect he'll play tomorrow, even if it's in a cameo fashion. But I love that because, if you were, can you imagine any professional side playing a 50-year-old these days? They just dare and do it. Well, they wouldn't
also,
do it.
Having had the pleasure of speaking with him, meeting with him over the years as well,
yes.
What an asset to the dressing room as well, for the young lads that are coming through as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, if I was in there and I was a young forward and I was sitting next to Barry Hales, who's played in the Premier League, then absolutely, I think I'd find that inspiring. But he's just a nice person as well. He is a great person to have around. And I often find that the footballers who've achieved the most have the most humility too. Mm. And he's a great example of that as well. So no, he's a joy to have around. When he first came here, the first time around, I think it was Ashley Smith who had been with him at Chesham. And he says, oh, you know, I want to bring Barry Hales, blah, 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 blah. And I can't remember whether he fibbed to me, but I thought he was 39. Yeah. I went with it. And it was only later that I discovered at the time he was 45. But in a way, I'm kind of glad I didn't know, because probably, you know, just based on sort of, you know, the norm, you generally assume that any sort of, you know, semi-professional level or step five and above, that would be tough for him to compete. But he is the exception that proves the rule, and he is exceptional in so many ways, and it's a joy to have him back, actually.
And I think that takes us to the conversation we actually had off air before we started this conversation, Kevin.
Yeah,
the world's all about context, and sometimes people have snippets of information and they don't actually know everything else that's gone on behind the scenes, or the reasons that have created that situation, or the work that other people have been putting in for days, weeks, months, years. And the context, if you might not have signed Barry Hales, you might not have made those Vars runs in the past, you might not have Barry Hales back as a coach if you'd known just one snippet of information back then. I think, you know, for everything that you've said to us today, and as a fan, you know, we'd say that we're by the fans, for the fans, and that's what we are, because we're all fans. You're involved in football because you're a fan. I'm involved in football because I'm a fan.
Absolutely.
We don't do anything to upset anybody. We're just trying to achieve the best. And sometimes, a bit like any regime where there's a hierarchy, the people that are surrounding us have to give a little bit of faith to the people at the top that they're making the right decisions. You can criticise, but you need to, you know, maybe have that conversation and find out exactly what's the reasons behind those decisions.
Yeah. And I think the challenge for the fans who are making those comments on social media, for example, is it's not, they're making those comments based on the information they have. And as a chairman or a leader or a manager, you can't possibly tell the whole world all the time the total context of every single decision you make. So I get why people will make comments on social media that probably don't bear scrutiny. But part of the challenge always in terms of communicating to the world is trying to get across the context. There's on the BBC News thing, they have it's called the context, and it's exactly that. You know, news is not news without context. And I love that, because it's absolutely true. Otherwise, it just becomes propaganda. You know, that's not helpful to anybody, because if people make decisions based on things that aren't true, then we all get a bit lost, don't we, somewhere along the line. So,
well, it's
but for me, context is everything. It is. But, you know, performance is always relative to the context in which it takes place. Always. And if you don't understand the context, you cannot put that performance in perspective, ever.
And I think to round off your
your
performance on the non-league show this week has been exemplary, and you've given us great context as to how a football club runs or doesn't run or stumbles or tries to get along. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Kevin. We probably could keep going for the rest of the afternoon, the rest of the week, but I'll leave you to go and prepare ahead of FA Vars' second qualifying round. Best of luck at the weekend. Best of luck with everything you're trying to do at the football club. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
You're welcome. Take care.
So time to head on over once again to Non-League Paper Towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Show, Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much, Tim. How are you?
Good. It's been a long week. It's been a long week. It is. Trying to squeeze everything into this show's difficult. Trying to squeeze everything into the Non-League Paper this weekend is going to be almost impossible, I think. FA Cup games to report on, replays. We've got the third qualifying round draw as well that took place this week. Plus, this weekend's FA Trophy, FA Vars fixtures, a packed league calendar. Another busy week in non-league management moves. We'll come to that in a minute. Do you actually remember what day it is?
it's crazy at the moment. I was just talking to talked to Matt Badcock earlier on about space that we had available for news. And we actually had to cut that back because there's just been so many managerial changes in these last 2 weeks. It's impossible to keep to keep track of it all. It's incredible. And as you say, it was that time of year where the trophy and the Vars, like on this Saturday, they're playing on the same day. We've got FA Cup. We've got some stonking replays in midweek, and a busy Saturday of FA Cup action last week. It's never ending, and I think if we could increase the size of the paper, if we had the manpower to do so, then we would this week. Yeah, we'd go for a bumper edition, but unfortunately, not able to do that. So we're going to have to cram a lot of information into our usual size paper, which is great for us because that's what we do the job for, and we want to report as much news and give you as much information as possible. So yeah, we love it, but come Saturday night when deadline's gone, we're pretty tired.
Yeah, and I suppose when I used to do the match day program, I could sometimes get away with dropping down to 0.9 on my font to try and squeeze a bit more in. You can't really do that in a proper newspaper. So I guess something has to get. And as you say, trying to keep up with it, I'll be honest. In my mobile phone, there was one manager that I spoke to this week, and I looked, and I think I've got 7 different mobile numbers for him over the years. Where old mobile one, old mobile two, where they change their mobile numbers. But I think I was 3 clubs behind where he was in the description of what club he was with in my contacts naming system. So I probably need a season off just to catch up with who's where, but. I mean, let's look at that managerial merry-go-round. The big appointment, I guess, being up at Oldham Athletic, a big name in John Sheridan stepping aside, and perhaps an even bigger name in David Unsworth stepping in. A great success as a player, and I think under 23 level at Everton, but I'm not quite sure about his non-league knowledge.
That's right. By all accounts, he's a very, very good coach. He's certainly learned his trade at Everton, but there's one thing learning a trade at a Premier League academy than there is in senior non-league football, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago. And it's a bold move. I mean, they only really have to look at Scunthorpe to suggest that the National League isn't always as it seems. Sometimes you need someone with big non-league and national league knowledge. David Unsworth, to my knowledge, hasn't got that. But he's a bright young coach. He's come across very well this week. He's talked to the cameras, and he's obviously a confident chap, and knows a lot about the game with his playing experience, and we'll obviously see how that goes. It could be an absolute masterstroke, but that's a tough job. I mean, Oldham haven't had the best of starts. They're arguably one of the biggest clubs in that league, having played in the Premier League previously. You know, they've got big ambitions to go back up, and the fans are quite rightly frustrated as to where they are at the moment. So he's got a big job in his hands, and they've had a few results go against him, really. So he needs to turn things around there. I think he'll be okay. I don't think I don't think Oldham are going to be threatening the playoffs this season. But I think if they give him time, it is something that could materialise into a strong challenge. But I'd be very surprised if that was this year.
Yeah, I mean, technically at the moment, they're nearer the relegation zone than the playoffs. So that sort of. It's very early days, but that sort of shows the task. What's he got? He's got a trip to Bromley at the weekend, which is not one of the easiest places to go on your first game. Mm. The thing that concerned me, and I've already spoken elsewhere in this show, that context is king, particularly when you're being quoted in this modern world, and people are using something you've said and that. But I did see that the big quote that was being touted around was that he chose Oldham because of the fan base. Now, I'm hoping that's because he saw a sleeping giant and he wanted to give big smiles back on those fans' faces. And it wasn't just because, well, they're a well-supported side. I'll go and follow them. I'll go and manage them. I wish him well. And I like you, you look at his pedigree. He's a great coach. But we also know that doesn't always translate when you get to the National League because, well, as we saw last week with results, anybody can match anybody.
That's right. I mean, you mentioned Bromley, and I think that was a good point because I think if you could name a National League team with probably the most non-league heritage, it probably is Bromley. Playing on a 4G pitch, it's not something that David Unsworth would be particularly used to. I wouldn't have thought. And they're going to a club with no football league history, but a club certainly on the up. And I think probably going to give him a little bit of a wake up call on Saturday as to sort of what non league is all about. And it'd be one of those occasions where I think he might sort of step back, and if the result doesn't go his way, he might think, okay, well, maybe I need to. Rethink this, because if you're going to go in there with the assumption that, you know, it's a big club, big fan base, automatic success, and he might have another thing coming, because the National League is a different animal.
And from a different angle, last week we spoke about the vacancy at Bracknell Town whilst unknowingly we interviewed the new manager, or rather the joint manager, Carl Withers, in his then role at Binfield FC. Him and Jamie McClurg, the players at Bracknell, were and then they've had great success there down the road as managers at Binfield, getting to the EFA Vars final. They deserve a chance managing at step three, but they are very much non-league, with that non-league knowledge, that non-league. We spoke about the camaraderie that they had at Binfield this season. I'm sure they'll bring that through at Bracknell as well.
Mm. Yes, two guys local to me. I must confess, I don't know them too well. But they certainly deserve their chance. They've done very well with a very small club in Binfield. To bring success to a club of that stature is tremendous. Obviously, the whole Bobby Wilkinson thing will hurt Bracknell. He was clearly sort of waiting for an opportunity to move up, and Bracknell have allowed him to do so, and he's left them in a very, very good place. They've also let their top striker go, Seth Bowman. They've let him go to Dorking Wanderers this week. They've not stood in his way. Dorking stepped in, I think, just at the right time. Obviously, waited for Bobby Wilkinson to go and for the dust to settle, and then got their man. And I think he's a very good player, Seth Bowman. He don't score 29 goals, but as a winger without being a top talent. And I think Dorking have got a good player there. So. It's going to be tough for the new managers to get going. Lost your star man, and you've basically got to start all over again. But it's a good structure at Bracknell, and I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, it's important that when we're talking about all these managerial merry-go-round, and yeah, I do think it is busier than ever, and sort of, you know, it's still. I mean, we're looking at the National League there. We've only played 9 games, and we're already talking about, you know, people hopping here, there, and everywhere, and moving up and down the pyramid and that sort of thing. And it probably says so much about the modern game that in a week that we've got this season's second qualifying round of the FA Vars. The management teams of both the Wembley finalists, only 2 competitions back, are no longer with those clubs. Dave McNabb parting with Warrington Rylands last week, and Withers McClurg departing from Binfield. There's little time to stop or get going as a manager now, even at non-league level. And well, we saw that this week with Anthony Johnson and Bernard Morley hitting that realisation, being shown the door at Spennymoor Town.
Yeah, so that was another sad one because I mean, Bernard and Anthony are two guys who know that league as well as anyone. They've managed there a long time, but I think when they first came in, they accepted it was going to be a tough call, more geographically more than anything. I think they were travelling in from Berry area, I think, right up to Spennymoor, which is a bit of a trek, and that's something that Spennymoor supporters and players will tell you that when you're in the far reaches of the country geographically, it's not always easy to attract the players that you want to make your team stronger. And I think they probably realise that more than this year. They haven't had the best start that they wanted, and unfortunately it's not worked out for them, but you're dead right. I mean, you're talking 8 or 9 games into a season, and managers going all the time. And I think, the first one was it's Blazy. I think they won their first 4 games and sacked their manager while they were top of the league. And you think, well, if you do that after 4 games of winning all 4, then what chance have some of these managers got?
Yeah, other movements as well. It's Maldon and Tiptree, Paul Abraham's departing there. We have had it's not all doom and gloom as well. There's newer appointments aplenty too. As one man goes, and another one comes in, I guess. We've had this week Ilkeston Town confirming this week that Jamie Ward has now been appointed permanent manager with Ben Turner as his assistant. And the chairman saying there that they've had a really positive impact. So I don't know if that's the support of doom type statement, but hopefully not. I think Jamie Ward, a great appointment there to take them to the next level. And elsewhere as well, Nantwich Town also confirmed that their interim team have been made permanent as well. Richie Sutton and Gary Taylor Fletcher have taken the reins since his departure a couple of weeks back when we spoke about legend Dave Cook there. And this week they've been given the role long term.
Yeah, 2 guys again with vast experience, players playing experience. Richie Sutton in his first job, and Gary Taylor Fletcher, as we all know Gary. He I think he's famously scored in all 5 top levels of English football. He's been there or thereabouts. So the 2 guys who know their football very, very well. They got some tough shoes to fill, though, with Dave Cook, who served the club so well for so long. So it's going to be tough for them guys. But I just hope they give them time to ease their way into the job and to get things settled down there. And I'm sure with the knowledge that they've got that they'll be a success. You ask a Blackpool fan what Gary Taylor Fletcher's like, and they'll be singing his praises. I'm not actually 100% sure what the structure is there. I mean, the statement that they put out, I thought was a little bit strange.
It was a little bit. Yeah, it didn't actually give
an idea as to who was in charge there. They said Richie Sutton along with Gary Taylor Fletcher. So I'm not quite sure what the hierarchy is there. But certainly there's 2 guys there with a huge amount of experience.
And away from managerial changes, the big news National League wise this week, well, I guess other than the series of draws, Dorking also ending Notts County's unbeaten start, but probably the story was the National League highlights embargo being changed to make it easier for clubs to put their own match highlights out on match days when BT Sport airing their highlight show. I believe clubs are now going to be able to post action immediately after that show's concluded, and on match days when there's no show, they can post from 6:15 to comply with all the UEFA rules. Sounds like a good compromise all round.
Yes, I think so. I think it was something that that had to be done. The National League have claimed that they were onto it, but it was certainly fueled by comments made by Ryan Reynolds, the multimillionaire. Wrexham co-owner, when he suggested that it needed doing now, and obviously that got the ball rolling a little bit, and there was a little bit of criticism that come their way, but thankfully they've met up and they've come up with a solution, and well done to BT Sport, who obviously highlighted the need for these clubs to gain as much revenue as they possibly can in these tough times, with sort of fans really sometimes going, you know, from, if you go from Dover up to Darlington or whatever, you know, that some of the sort of distances that some of these National League fans have to make these days, and it's going to come a point where those sort of trips won't be viable anymore. But at least this way, fans can see their clubs in action, and the clubs can get some revenue as well. So good compromise all round, and I'm pleased that it's finally come to a conclusion that is satisfactory for everyone.
Yeah, and that sort of brings us on quite neatly to the fact that away from the action, the non-league paper, in association with the Football Supporters Association, have launched a survey to try and get some insight into the impact on non-league football, the cost of living crisis.
Yes, we've been in contact with the FSA. They're quite keen on doing this this survey, and this is not the first time that we've worked together on situations such as this. But obviously, with the current crisis, they felt it best to get that survey out. So if you do get an opportunity, and click onto our website, the link will be there. You can click onto the link and give your thoughts, because I know that the Football Supporters Association will be very grateful for any input or any suggestions. And of course, over the next few weeks, we'll be running something results kind of outlook as to sort of what those comments were. So keep your eyes out on the non-league paper and the FSA website over the next few weeks.
Well, of course, we'll have our eyes all over the non-league paper this weekend. There are plenty of games, plenty of managerial movements. Anything in particular that we should be looking out for in this weekend's edition of the non-league paper?
Obviously, we've got all these managerial changes. We've also got a big spread on the FA Cup. It was a big week in the FA Cup this week with midweek replay action. I was speaking to Steve Butterworth. He's the manager of Romford, and
big result.
They beat Potters Bar Town last Saturday. It was a fantastic result for them. And you know, if ever there's a club who deserve a little bit of glory, it's them. You know, they've really been through the doldrums over the last few years, and you know, for them to be in this position and the chance of a nice big cup run, then you know that they're obviously buzzing. So we've been chatting to them, and one of my colleagues has also been at Beckingham Town. We've been going to see Beckenham. They're in a similar situation. They found themselves in a precedent situation, having beaten Dartford last Saturday away from home. What a result that is. And so they're on a high too. So yeah, we're focusing on I'll use the word giant killers at this stage, but the non-league giant killers, should we say. And there's certainly some really good ties to get your teeth into next Saturday.
As ever, a big thank you for your help. We'll look forward to reading the non-league paper this weekend, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon. Thanks for joining us, John Couch.
Thank you.
And that is it for this week. Thank you as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to all those involved in FA Vars and FA Trophy this weekend. And league action, of course, it is beginning to heat up. And finally, a big thank you to all of those for listening too. Remember, you can tell your friends, share the pod, every little helps. And you can, of course, follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there, at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom and Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, GeoSavin, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers, and all good and some fairly average podcast aggregation sites. Remember to stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.